Before the Russian invasion, a band from Ukraine had a style that took them to the Eurovision Song Contest.
Wow, we can combine, you know, Ukrainian folk music with modern electronic music and it sounds great.
The songs of their childhood shaped their music, plus a Congolese musician who got his own early start.
I made my own guitar when I was like 7 years old. The first guitar was like one string.
Now, five strings later, he's got a new album that's all about staying positive. I'm Marco Werman, also on the show. The Beach Boys once worked with legendary music producer Van Dyke Parks. To work with him was a dream for another musician in Mexico. A dream until one day Park returned her call.
I told Van Dyke, my knees are shaking. Is it you? Is it you? And he's like, come on, come on.
It's an all-music special today here on The World. I'm Marco Werman. This is The World. Welcome to you all on this July 4th. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, words enshrined in America's Declaration of Independence. We wanted to use those words to frame our show today. We're dipping into our archives and featuring musicians who celebrate life, sing about liberty, or just make us feel happy. We start today with a group from Ukraine, Goe Band. You met them on the show just weeks before Russia invaded their country at the end of February. Goe Band has their finger on the pulse of Ukraine's roots. They electrify traditional Ukrainian styles, which makes perfect sense once you know their backstory.
Hello, I'm Katerina Pavlenko. I'm lead singer from Goe Band from Ukraine.
Hi, my name is Taras Shevchenko. I'm the founder and the keyboards percussion player for Goe. What got me into music? Well, I think it was my mother. Since I was just an infant, she was singing to me. She was a big Beatles fan, so I listened to Beatles also. And of course, I didn't understand the lyrics, but my mother just tried to explain to me what it was. And then there was a moment when I first heard and saw Queen Band. And after that moment, I thought, okay, this is what I want to do in my life. I want to make music.
When I was a small child, I hear my grandmother, she sing me lullaby, she sing me Ukrainian folk songs.
Go ahead.
Котику сіренький, котику біленький, котку волохатий, не ходи до хати. Like this. I remember a time when my grandmother gathered with other old women and they singing Ukrainian folk song in polyphonic. Mm. It was very amazing.
First of all, before Goe, Kate and myself, we were playing in different rock and metal bands. And then I thought about making a electronic musical project with some interesting ideas from Ukrainian folklore. We thought that, wow, we can combine, you know, Ukrainian folk music with modern electronic music and it sounds great.
It's a spring song. Our ancestors believe that when they gather and singing very loudly, winter go home and spring go to Ukraine. And it was a spring ritual song. Yes. Ой, вийду я на полянку, заспіваю я веснянку, зимували, не співали, весну довго дожидав.
We were invited to participate in Ukraine's national selection for Eurovision, and we understood that we had to make a song for that. We recorded it with folk lyrics, and they said, okay, so you'll be in the semi-final, but you need to change lyrics, because you have folk lyrics and you need to have your own lyrics there. So Kate wrote about herself.
Shum, it's the same story.
Yeah, same story with Shum, because
first version. It's a Ukrainian authentic song, ritual song, but new in Eurovision it was new lyrics. А в нашого шуму дома зеленая шуба, дівки гуляли, шубу порвали. Сію-вію, конопелечки, сію-вію, зеленесенькі.
Wow.
This song about awaken, about connect people with nature, about coronavirus, about the story that people can connect and make this world much better.
That was Katerina Bolenka and Taras Shevchenka from the Ukrainian group Goe Band. They told their story to the world's Daniel Offman, who was in Kyiv just weeks before Russia invaded in February. These days, Goe Band is touring Europe and using their platform to speak out against the war. Back in 1970, people were protesting a different war, the one in Vietnam. Here in the U.S., music played a huge role in those protests and in a massive countercultural movement. I want to tell you about an extraordinary album of Indian ragas just released this year that was recorded back then. There is a wild backstory to it and the man who recorded it. That story begins on January 31st, 1970.
Hey, I got a statement to make. That
a show by the Grateful Dead in New Orleans.
A blatant attempt on the part of the establishment to keep rockers from coming here.
The Dead and their traveling legion of fans had been hassled by the police since they'd arrived in town.
Ooh, oh good. Oh, now good. I'm going to do a little paranoid fantasy song for you.
Something was in the air, but the show went on.
In the timbers of the Nereole, the wolves are running round.
A few hours later, the band was back at their hotel with their sound engineer, Owsley Stanley, who also happened to be one of the most prolific producers of LSD in history, and the police busted all of them for drug possession. Owsley Stanley would begin a 2-year prison sentence later that same year. With that in his future, Owsley continued working steadily for several more months as a sound engineer back home in San Francisco.
And now Ustad Ali Akbar Khan Sarod, Indranil Bhattacharya Sitar, and Zakir Hussain Tabla will perform rags Kafi Jila Kafi, followed by...
Owsley Stanley had what he called his sonic journals, exceptionally high-quality analog recordings that also served as labs in his never-ending quest for the best sound possible. This concert is part of that collection, Three Masters of Music from the Asian Subcontinent. It happened in May of 1970, on the eve of Owsley's prison term. After his release, he and Zakir Hussain got to know each other pretty well. Zakir found Owsley to be, with certain things, completely monofocused.
I mean, I remember some years later, he walked into my apartment in San Anselmo and said, "Zakir, we should move to Maui, up the volcano, because the world is going to end next year. We have to go because that's the only safe place on this earth." He actually did move to Maui and then eventually to Australia. But when he decided that something had to be done, nothing on the periphery was going to in any way distract him.
Owsley Stanley recorded this session of ragas at what was the hangout for the Grateful Dead in San Francisco, the Family Dog.
My first encounter with Owsley was there at the Family Dog. This was this maniac running around all over the stage, you know, tripping over wires and falling and getting up and running and setting up microphone stands and setting up microphones and then running back to his Nagra machine on the side of the stage and put his headphones on and listen for a minute and then throw his headphones off and run back. And he was a man possessed and with this idea in his head, move the microphones, but also record it in a way where people could actually close their eyes and know where the musicians were sitting on the stage.
Resulting in what you're hearing now. There's a deep respect, a reverence almost, in Owsley's desire to get the sound right, for this music especially. Zakir Hussain had already picked up on that perception of Indian music through his introduction to American audiences.
I had just come from India, and I was still coming to grips with what the audiences were like here. My first encounter was at Fillmore East in New York, playing with Pandit Ravi Shankar. And I sat down on the stage, and it was dark in the hall, and there was an incredible smell. And I said, what is this smell? And then I finally realized that the whole audience, each one of them, was holding a burning incense in their hand. So just imagine 1,000 incenses, what kind of a smell that would have.
Wow. And that presumably never happens in India.
Oh, it never happens in India. And in India, you can see the audience. Here, you couldn't see the audience. And in India, in those days, you could have an interaction with the audience. Somebody would shout out, yeah, that's great, do that again, and stuff like that. But there was not that kind of an interaction.
But something else did happen. Something Zakir Hussain was not expecting.
Automatically, as a defensive mechanism, it became obvious to us as musicians, we were going to interact with each other. It wouldn't matter what the audience was doing. And that raised the level of conversation, musical conversation that was happening amongst us, to a whole different level.
Ali Akbar Khan, who plays Sarod here, had just founded his world-famous music school in San Rafael in 1970. And with the kind of artistic epiphany Zakir Hussain had at the Family Dog, he joined what was a special California scene, a scene that gets less attention than its psychedelic reputation.
I would say like a global musical renaissance happening in the Bay Area, because there were musicians from Africa, from Middle East, from Indonesia, from Japan, from India, of course, everybody was here. And there was this growing awareness among musicians who were native of this place that there was a lot of music in the world that they should connect with. So there was an incredible interaction going on. And I just happened to arrive there in the right place at the right time.
And stayed until today. The recording produced by Owsley Stanley, the Grateful Dead sound man, featuring Zakir Hussain, Usted Ali Akbar Khan, and Indranil Bhattacharya, is titled That Which Colors the Mind. Coming up, we introduce you to two young up-and-coming artists, one in Mexico and one in the UK. You're listening to The World. I'm Marco Werman. You're with The World. And this is a special July 4th edition of the show, revisiting musicians we've had recently on The World. At the beginning of this year, we introduced you to Mexican artist Silvana Estrada. She's in her mid-20s and currently touring Europe and the U.S., but this is not an arena tour. Estrada writes reflective songs which have their own nuanced pop appeal. The World's Latin America correspondent Jorge Valencia sat down with Estrada in Mexico City right before the release of her debut album, Marchita, which in English means withered.
Te perdido tantas veces.
The first single has the same name as the album. In Spanish, Marchita means withered. It's a love story.
Y si yo hubiera sabido que para ti era tan poco.
In fact, it's a love story that Silvana Estrada has been thinking about for years. We met on a rooftop, the Mexico City sun shining down on us. And she says she has told the story so many times.
I'm not able to actually remember how it was.
Every time she retells it, she says she gives a different version.
I'm going to give you a version.
It's the story of Estrada's first love, she says. She's written about it in many of her songs, including one of her most famous, Al Norte, or To the North.
Que por ti me voy al norte, que por ti me voy al sur.
That song is like about chasing your love. It's like it doesn't matter if you're going to the north or to the south, and it doesn't matter if there's a destiny, because the important thing is that I'm going with you.
Eventually, that beautiful relationship she chased after, yeah, it ended. Estrada's then boyfriend skipped town, and she says she realized she'd been leaning on him to take care of her instead of relying on herself. She says she wrote Marchita, this new single, to remind herself she can be happy on her own, doing things like yoga.
Yeah, I do yoga a lot. Yoga heals me a lot, so I do a lot of yoga. I walk a lot. I read a bunch of poems and books, and for me that's like the best moment of my day.
When Estrada began composing Marchita, she was no longer living where she grew up, in a house in a forest in Mexico's Gulf state of Veracruz, and she was struggling with big city life.
Totally. I was like really having a rough time. I just moved here, and I was living in this really tiny, tiny place.
She says she was living next to a busy highway, getting very little sunlight and lots of noise, which Mexico City is full of. Like the junk collectors who drive around blasting their advertisement on loudspeakers, or the ubiquitous trucks hawking bread. After you hear them enough times, you start to lose your mind a little.
It was really, like, rough.
So Estrada began experimenting with a genre that reminded her of being out in the country, the traditional Mexican huapango. She plays a small four-string instrument called the Venezuelan cuatro.
Yeah, you know, I was just playing with this minor chords.
Estrada says that as she was playing in that dark, crammed, and noisy room, she thought of a withered flower.
Started from there, actually. It wasn't like, oh, I want to talk about this story of mine. It was like, oh, I want to say this word because I feel like this withered flower that I have in my head.
The result is anachronistic. Marchita, the song, and the whole record has a vintage vibe in that it's mostly Estrada's voice and her acoustic cuatro. She says she did experiment with more modern electronic arrangements.
Of course, I was like, oh, that's the music now, so I should do that. But I felt sad having these danceable moments. I was like, why I feel this way? Like, I don't feel me.
Instead, Estrada went in the opposite direction. Her parents are luthiers and make violins, cellos, and double basses. So she and producer Gustavo Guerrero got musicians to perform music that reminded her of home.
I would be like, hey, play this melody in this part. No?
And that's the ending of Marchita, a love story that's really about how Silvana Estrada learned how to take care of herself.
I learned to follow like my instinct. And I also learned if you're honest, then you're going to be happy, or at least you're going to be in peace. Sometimes peace is better than happy, you know?
No hubieras querido estar canción.
For the world, I'm Jorge Valencia in Mexico City.
Let's hear from another breakout artist we told you about back in January. Joy Crooks from the UK. She wrote the song Poison when she was 16.
You're scared of snakes. I'm scared of you, but you've got poison.
It went viral on YouTube. 7 years later, in 2021, it showed up again on Joy's debut album, Skin.
The poison you say you got it from your mother. The poison.
Joy Crooks is a Londoner at heart. Born there to a mother from Dhaka, Bangladesh, her father from Dublin. Crooks' lyrics are thoughtful. She credits her favorite class in school, history, for that. And she explained to German entertainment network Diffus a couple of months ago.
The reason why I love history is because you need to know your sources, but also you need to know context. Context is like incredibly important in understanding a piece of history or a story in history, etc. What was going on in that time for this to happen, right? So I see my music in the same way. It's like giving you all of the context before the actual moment of impact.
Poison, you say. From some others, the poison, there isn't anyone.
Last year wasn't just a boost for Joy Crooks as a British musician. She was also selected to be part of a 50th anniversary celebration of the creation of her mother's home of Bangladesh. That led to this performance broadcast by the BBC. This is Joy's cover of a love song from a 1959 Bengali musical film. The song was a huge hit in Bengali-speaking India and what was then East Pakistan, the area before it became Bangladesh. I wrote Tomar Amar is a title, which translates from Bengali as Tonight is Mine and Yours. As one commenter wrote on YouTube, proud of you, I am a Bengali. Another wrote, beautiful Joy, keep on singing Bangla songs. Stay with us. We have more music in the second half of this July 4th All Music edition of the show. You're listening to The World. Remember the 70s funk and soul band War? One of their key members came out with a new album this year. Lee Oscar's latest music is his way of processing his family's history, going back to the Holocaust.
This has liberated me. Back onto the grave and not expressed those deep things in my soul, then how could I consider myself an artist?
That's coming up in this half hour on The World. I'm Marco Werman. You're with The World. We're a co-production of GBH Boston and PRX. Music sometimes can be revolutionary, culturally, but also in a literal way, a political way. Of course, the Beatles had a song called Revolution, but even with that lyrical banner, the Beatles' impact in some parts of the world went even deeper. In Argentina, the Fab Four influenced several generations of rockers, and the influence didn't stop at the music. Here's The World's Lucia Benavides telling us how her country heard and processed the Beatles.
My mom, Ida, was 10 years old when the Beatles first came into her life. It was 1963, and her dad had just bought her the album with the Beatles.
Then we began listening to the records, no, of the Beatles. And that was the beginning of everything.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles!
Close your eyes and I'll kiss you.
The Beatles quickly became the most popular band in Argentina, as they did in many parts of the world.
Well, the Beatles were on TV all the time. I had all my notebooks with photos of the Beatles.
And soon, there were groups from all over Latin America imitating their sound. One of them was Los Shakers, four lads from Uruguay who decided to form the band in 1964 after watching the Beatles movie A Hard Day's Night.
We want you to count.
They would sing in English.
We want you to hear.
And they would dress like the Beatles.
We want you to dance all night long.
And they were very good.
But when the
biggest hit, released in 1966, was called Break It All, and it was proof that good rock music could be made right there on home soil. But Argentine musician Lito Nevia says there was one thing missing, lyrics locals could understand.
Cuando le preguntan, vos sos de los primeros que empezó a cantar en castellano, ¿y en qué íbamos a cantar, en japonés?
He says people often point out his band was one of the first in Argentina to sing in Spanish. For him, it was ridiculous not to sing in their native tongue. In 1967, Nevia and his band Los Gatos released their first single, La Balsa, and it was an overnight sensation. La Balsa became the first rock hit in Argentina sung in Spanish. Lyrics explore the urge to escape this sad and abandoned world, to gather enough wood to build una balsa, a raft, and float aimlessly at sea.
Esta idea de los años 60, de que nadie tiene que tener número ni hacer lo mismo.
It's this idea from the 1960s, he says, where you don't have to conform to society, you can live however you want. The success of Los Gatos was followed by the emergence of numerous rock bands. Manal, Almendra, Arcoiris. It ushered in a whole new era of Argentine music. El rock argentino.
Beso mares de algodón, sin mareas, suaves son, sublimándolo.
So it's really a grassroots thing. That's how it grew.
Gustavo Santolalla was the lead singer and guitarist of Arcoiris. Now, he's an Oscar-winning producer and composer based in L.A. He says rock argentino has its own particular sound. It often fuses British rock with Latin American folk music. His band was one of the first in Argentina to experiment with this, using traditional rhythms from the Andes Mountains region and instruments like the siku, a type of pan flute.
I didn't want to just write songs, you know, that were kind of like Beatles songs, but in Spanish, you know. I wanted to do something that had an identity.
The birth of rock argentino coincided with a turbulent time in Latin American history when many countries fell under military dictatorships and tens of thousands of supposed political dissidents were tortured and killed. Many of the victims were students, journalists, social workers, and musicians.
We were somehow, you know, persecuted by the government. The only thing I did was having long hair and playing an electric guitar and playing a rock band. I didn't belong to any political party.
Rock music was seen as a threat to military rule, and musicians like Santolalla and Nevia went into exile. But they continued to write music and speak out against human rights violations through veiled lyrics that were subtle enough to pass censorship laws. Santolalla says using music to question authority stemmed in part from the Beatles.
They provided great service to humankind, not only by giving us fantastic music, but also in a way by leading us through these changes that were happening in the world.
He says it was a momentous time when music was at the forefront of revolutionary change. For the world, I'm Lucia Benavides.
Since 2002, the project Playing for Change has been musically revolutionary. Playing for Change goes around the world, recording musicians as they play together on a well-known song in their own styles. It started with Stand By Me, the Ben E. King classic, followed by scores of other tunes, recorded in more than 50 countries with over 1,000 different artists. We recently introduced you to one of them. This is Congolese guitarist Jason Tamba, who signed up for Playing for Change's cover of Bob Marley's legendary track, War No More Trouble. Now Jason Tamba has stepped out from behind Playing for Change and released his first solo album, Don't Give Up. Get Say My Name is the title of this track, and Jason Tamba joins us from Los Angeles. Jason, let's start with your experience with Playing for Change. You've been able to travel to over 25 countries, spreading this musical message of hope and unity. What did all that give you?
People are just the same, you see? People have to be united and leave all the problems behind, you know? Some good stuff happening around all over the world, you know? When you talk to the people, you feel like, oh, we all of us the same, you know?
Well, you've spoken with a lot of people, also worked with some pretty famous names like Peter Gabriel, Angélique Kidjo, Bono, and now you've released your debut solo album. Was this something you had been wanting to do for a long time, to release an album of your own?
The idea of releasing an album was there a long time ago. I was really attached to the guitar. And then I made my own guitar when I was like 7 years old.
You built a guitar at the age of seven.
I built my guitar. The first guitar was like one string. And then I built a four-string guitar when I was 10, 12 years old.
It feels like the title of your album, your solo album, Don't Give Up, it says a lot about you and just your outlook on life. Is that a perspective that you have just learned to live by? Like, don't give up.
Exactly. Since Congo, you know, from Congo until being in America, there is a story to tell, you know. I went through many things. Even that, I didn't stop working on my music, you know. That's like a piece of advice to give to the kids. Like, if you want to do something, don't give up. You have to be positive. Keep on doing that, no matter what's happening around you.
That's Congolese musician Jason Tamba. His debut album is Don't Give Up. Speaking of great soul music, War, the legendary funk and soul band from the 1970s. Their music was steeped in the streets of East Los Angeles, like the title track to their album, The World is a Ghetto. But for Lee Oscar, one of the co-founders of War, he carried a personal story that preceded those streets of L.A. he became so well acquainted with, a story that went back to his childhood in Denmark. He was born just after World War II. His mother was a survivor of the Holocaust. Lee Oscar says at the age of 17, he had to break free to find out who he was.
I left home young, and I left home for, I guess, an instinct, get away from the stress, the whole energy that's, you know, surrounded because of the uncertainties that still carries over from the war. And being this kid who was just dreaming and imagining myself being a musician and conductor, I just ventured out and wanted to find my dream come true.
Since 1992, when Lee Oscar left his band, War, he's been a solo artist. Earlier this year, he released a new album, Never Forget, a musical suite, really, that he composed. It helped him process his family's history going back to World War II and the Holocaust.
in my situation, I carried, just horrific feelings that were filtered, you know, from my mother and my Aunt Judy, who escaped the death march when they were trying to get rid of all the evidence. The Nazis were getting rid of the evidence of who was in the killing camps. And my mom and my aunt, when they were being marched out of Stutthof into the death grave, the bombing started, and then everybody just ran their own ways, and some people got away, including my mom and my Aunt Judy. That's filtered and carried with me. And as an artist, I have to say that if I went to the grave not digging really deep and processing all these demons and just things that I've had, I mean, have fear of anti-Semitic. I grew up with the fear, and so this has liberated me. But if I'd gone to the grave and not expressed those deep things in my soul, then how could I consider myself an artist? So I have a fiduciary responsibility to myself, to my family, and to the world. It would be ridiculous if I didn't express what was deep in my soul, and that's what came out. These things that I constantly carry with me from the war.
Never forget, the album has been described as a soundtrack to a movie that has not been made, and that does feel accurate when you listen. I'd like to add some pictures to the music. I mean, there's a beautiful overture of sorts, and then we hear a poignant minor key piece called Miracle Children. As you said, your mother and your aunt both survived the Holocaust. Is Miracle Children their story?
Their mother got the gas chamber, and they and so my mother being older, and just the ways my mom looks through a lens and the way my Aunt Judy looks through a lens are different, and Judy being younger. She came out to be an activist, marched with Martin Luther King, and she said to me one day, she says, you know, Oscar, you are the miracle child, because when my mother and Judy ended up in Denmark and got liberated with the Red Cross there, they thought all the Jews were murdered, massacred. And of course, in Denmark, they said, no, the Jewish people were taken over to Sweden. They'll be coming back soon, you know. So my Aunt Judy said, you were the first child that I knew of. You know, we knew. I mean, you know, they didn't even know they were going to make it out of the killing camp.
Your mother and your Aunt Judy no longer alive.
That is true, yeah. Mm.
So this album is dedicated to them and your children.
It's dedicated to the world. I really hope that in the long run that this can just add one more thing to remind people and hopefully counter the horrific things that humanity will continue always to do to each other. Hopefully this will somehow add to maybe there will be peace in the world. If this is about humanity. This is my story, my memoir, but it's not about being Jewish. It's more about how ugly humanity can be to each other and yet how beautiful we can be to each other. And the bottom line really is that if you emphasize on a commonality, you'll find that we all have so much in common and very little that's not in common. I mean, the things that makes us unique differently is not what we should emphasize at first. Should emphasize on the commonality so we can get rid of fear and all this stereotype stuff. Then you can engage the beautiful things that people have as differences.
That was Lee Oscar speaking with me earlier this year. His album is called Never Forget. When the Beach Boys came out with Good Vibrations in 1966, they became more than a surf band from California. Critics called it a mini symphony. One of the band's closest collaborators at that time was Van Dyke Parks, a standout innovator in the LA music scene, a producer, arranger, and songwriter. He had also long been interested in music from other parts of the globe. That curiosity led to last year's collaboration with Mexican singer and musician Veronica Valerio. Rounding out this hour today, we wanted to revisit the conversation I had with both of them a year ago.
Desorden de las estrellas, hoy que salí a mirar, buscándome estoy en ellas, no me he podido encontrar.
So, Veronica, what did you think when this legendary American producer you'd never met wanted to work with you?
I told Van Dyke, my knees are shaking. Is it you? Is it you? And he's like, come on, come on. I was very, very excited.
You knew about Van Dyke Parks and his career and what he's done.
Absolutely. I'm just remembering the moment when he called me back, because I sent him a message. And after he wrote me back, next thing he did was calling me on the phone. That's what I was like, what? Is this you? For real?
Van Dyke Parks, how did you first come across Veronica's music?
Veronica asked me if I was able to help her get a record. And I admitted immediately that at the age of 78, I'm totally passé, and that I was just useless. But I thought, on the other hand, what is it that you do? And I asked her then to send me some music. And no kidding, it floored me. It floored me because it brought back something very familiar to me, in spite of the fact that I'm totally Anglo in my origins and my gravitation. But the thing is, it was the harp that got me. And Veronica plays harp and is part of a tradition that is in her family, of her grandfather, etc., with this, with the affection for the harp. And so Veronica's music, the language, the irregularity of the meter, it was the greatest opportunity I've had folklorically in music in my life. I'm very fascinated by it.
Those are impressive words.
Del cerro hacia los bajíos se juntaron las corrientes. Entre lluvias y crecientes, entre montañas y llanos.
Veronica, when did you start playing the harp in this style of music, son jarocho? I mean, it's very traditional, isn't it?
Yeah, I was 13 when I met my biological dad, who happens to be a harp player. I knew about music because I was surrounded by singer-songwriters, but I had a cultural shock when I met my dad, and the only thing that could us get through any kind of conversation, which happens to be music, no words conversation, we never got into that. But on music, we did.
So the other thing that's kind of fascinating about this project, Veronica, you and Van Dyke Parks have actually never met in person. The pandemic interrupted the in-person collaboration. It doesn't seem to have affected the captivating quality of this music, though. But what has that process been like for you?
I've been, this is a word in Spanish, pedaleando myself, like biking alone, you know? And for a few times, there is people who resonates with me, and all of a sudden, I have to go because I moved to a different city, or I had changed the country. I mean, I had to move from the country or whatever. But with Van Dyke, I never felt like, he's here and he's gonna leave, or I am going to leave. It gave me some kind of freedom. It's his personality. It's such a, like, ¿cómo se dice? Honest, authentic, that it never got me to feel, oh, he's leaving, I am leaving, or nothing. It was just a smooth calm. It's like, is this somebody that I'm supposed to know? He's just a gentleman.
So Van Dyke Parks, situate this project and Veronica's voice against the backdrop of, like, all your other work, from the Beach Boys' Smile, your own American songscapes, pairing American idioms with sounds from other parts of the world, like Latin or West Indian music. In your mental musical map that has been your long career, where does this album, Only in America, fit in?
Well, you'll notice the album title is Only in America. And that is sin fronteras. It's without these borders, these impositions. This is an invitation to multiculturalism. I don't speak Spanish. but I speak music. And that's why I responded to Veronica. And always, whether it was the Beach Boys, the Steel Bands, Arlo Guthrie, Everly Brothers, whatever it was, every aspect of this record took me somewhere out of the box. This was a poetic force of Veracruz, and I was all of a sudden very fortunate to have crossed the aisle.
Yo nací con la luna de plata y nací con alma de pirata. He nacido rumbera y jarocha, trovadora de peras.
Veronica, for you as a Mexican singer, why was it important to be part of a project called Only in America? I mean, what does the U.S. mean to you?
It means family. To me, this album reunites like all the differences, but come in a togetherness, if it is that possible.
Mm.
Like all those differentiation, but with no bridges or borders or anything. It's just one, big, but one.
Son tus noches, diluvio de estrellas, palmera y mujer.
When will you actually meet each other? Like, will it be the first live show?
I don't know. I've been wondering if to bring this bottle of mezcal to Van Dyke's door before my visa expires. I don't know. We're doing our part. The rest is up to the universe.
Well, I'm counting on the universe to do the right thing. Veronica Valerio and Van Dyke Parks. The album is Van Dyke Parks Orchestrates Veronica Valerio, Only in America. Thank you both for speaking with us.
You're most kind.
Thank you.
Va volando sin escalas, un pájaro en el ciprés.
As for that meeting, a year on and they still have not met in person. Veronica told us in an email that her visa appointment is scheduled for the fall. She adds, there should be a party. Well, we hope you're having one today. It does not have to end here, though. We've built a Spotify playlist with these and other artists we've featured on the show. Find a link to that on our Twitter feed. We are at The World. The World comes to you from the Nan and Bill Harris studio at GBH in Boston. I'm Marco Werman. Enjoy the rest of your holiday. We'll see you again tomorrow.